If you don't know your Burgundy from your Bordeaux, and even if you do, you'll want to stay tuned. This afternoon, we're marking Thanksgiving with a book about wine. It's called Red, White, and Drunk All Over by Canada's own Natalie McLean. And Tanis Shalaka is a writer and director of the Humber School for Writers. Kathy English is a journalist. They live in Toronto and are in Toronto. Stephen Galloway is a writer in Vancouver. He is in Vancouver. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
In all parts, flung far away.
Across many wine regions.
Across many wine regions, yes. Nice to have you on. Tanis Shalaka, would you mind... you know, giving us a rousing cheer, a toast, and kick things off, and do a brief description of what
yes.
Natalie McLean's red, I want to say red, but I'm saying red, white, and drunk all over is all about.
That's what you say after a couple of glasses of
red,
wine.
Red, white, and drunk.
So, Natalie McLean is a Nova Scotia-born writer, a Canadian, lives in Ottawa now, and she's written a primer, if you want to be that way, for people who love to drink wine, not only for its aesthetic qualities, but for the alcohol kick that it gives as well, for the buzz that comes with it. And I love this book because she combines three really winning elements for me. First, she is sexy, seductive. She has a very sensual approach to the drinking of wine. You know, unlike a lot of wine books, you feel like you're reading an encyclopedia, whereas here it's her experience of drinking. Next, I like her language, in particular at the beginning. I think she has some bon mot. At one point, I had it written down as a Bartlett's factory. And then lastly, it gives some good, solid information about selected areas. It's not an all-encompassing book. So it talks about Burgundy. It talks about California wines and her experience in wine stores and having a boozy kind of lunch with Jay McInerney as well.
Thank you. And it is a guide to wine. It's meant to teach you. Is it an instruction manual to some degree? Not in, of course, as you describe it, the writing, but...
I'm afraid I've been distracted. There's a certain amount of instruction here, but it's mostly instruction about sensuality, about the experience of drinking a great wine, and she's a wonderful guide on this. I would travel with her again.
All right, we'll be discussing many of these things. Thank you very much. Well done. Stephen Galloway, you're in Vancouver. Your wife runs a winery. This
yes.
book has several passionate, if not eccentric, vintners. Were they familiar characters to you?
They were. I should probably preface it by saying I think the strength of this book is how much it makes you be interested in wine even when you're not. I find myself loathing the wine industry, and not the characters, but the very nature of it. And
why is that?
The snobbery. One of the elements she was talking about in the Burgundy section was the bioculture. Is that what they were calling
Biodynamics,
it?
Biodynamics.
Yeah. In abstraction, that sort of stuff irritates the heck out of me, just the listening to the grape and feeling the grape and all that sort of stuff. But the way she did it, when I drove out this morning, I drove by our grapes, and I thought, I should listen to you. It was really powerful that way. Some of the things she was dealing with, Canada probably doesn't have those types of characters. You know, we don't have people going back 300 years whose family escaped the French Revolution by hiding in the cellars.
No, but we've got people who go back 30 years and escape the French Revolution. No, that's what we've got in Canada.
Yeah, it's a brasher kind of group of people. They're more marketers than they are winemakers.
We'll come back to that point as well. Kathy English, and I was going to say you have planned trips so you can go to wineries, but you are in fact in the middle of planning another trip to go to a winery. Did you get any ideas from this book? Was it a model for you?
Absolutely, definitely. She says drinking wine where it's made gives it extra sensory voltage. And last fall we went...
Another winning phrase.
Last fall we went to the Napa Valley and loved the whole idea of just meandering through rows, stopping and sipping wine. So this year we're off to the south of France to do the same thing.
This book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, Natalie McLean's book, it covers everything from, widows making champagne to pricey stemware to how to taste wine. What did you each learn from the book? I mean, if any.
Which she awoke in me. Great wine memories. So, for example, being in France one time and having brought in a Spanish wine to my guest in the south of France, and they were a couple having a difficult time. So the husband opened one bottle for his wife's birthday, a second, a third. She sent all three back to him. Just three of us sitting there. She opened my wine and she said, well, at least Antanas loves me. You know, so the wine carries. So it's these, all this evocation, all these moments that occur around great bottles of wine. So that's what she does for me. It's sort of that, it's the Madeleine moment, but the wine equivalent.
That's what you want to do when you travel, is bring back as many bottles of wine as you legally can and illegally can.
You have to be careful now. You buy them and you can't put them in your carry-on luggage anymore.
It's going to be a big problem this year. I thought that the book was it was an aesthetic pleasure, but she also educates, she informs. And I, just speaking to Stephen's point, I thought that she made wine, she got around the snobbery of it. She said, yeah, it's a snobby thing, but we don't have to be snobby about it. We can enjoy it. Wine is a pleasure. That's all it really is.
I think what it did for me, it reminded me that, you know, drinking wine is more than just, you know, drinking an alcoholic beverage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to say it made a novelist want to have a drink is not doing anything at all. But, you know, it really did make me want to go out and buy a bottle of wine I hadn't bought. It's a funny thing, if you are in the wine business, I don't know about other people. I do know this is true. If you make wine and you live within 400 feet of 100,000 bottles of it, you don't go to the liquor store very often and buy an expensive bottle of wine.
You just drink the local stuff.
Yeah, but it's the same. It's like reading the same book. It's like reading your own book over and over and over again. It's got to the point.
And what's wrong with that?
You haven't read my books, clearly.
You know, Stephen, I had the same experience. I finished this book on a Saturday morning at about 11 o'clock and went up and dropped $100 at the liquor store right upon completion. If I could just jump in, one other thing about her that I think is great is that she herself is in no way a snob. She's really like a Canadian moment.
Girl
she
from
goes,
Cape Breton.
Yeah, she goes for lunch with Jay McInerney. She feels nervous. She puts on a dinner party, and what a dinner party. The wines, the courses. She's got this flutter in her stomach. So, you know, Canadians are, what should we say, occasionally an unsure people. And she sort of reflected this back, this lack of confidence, and yet she goes for it anyway, which is a delightful message. You can be Canadian and find your pleasure as well.
The book works. It's not really a book about wine. I viewed it as a memoir. You know, it's a book about Natalie McLean, who happens to really love wine. If you didn't like the persona of Natalie McLean, you're putting this book down and you're gone, right? There's nothing in it that you can't get somewhere else except the Natalie McLean.
And I think that's part of the wine business, that you have to create a persona. I was kind of amazed that I think she started doing this in the mid-90s. In a short period of time, she's achieved quite a reputation, you know, now her first book, in a business that, writing about wine, particularly in Canada, has been mainly a boys' club. So she almost had to create a persona, I think, to sell herself and to follow her passion.
All right, now, since we're on the subject, since we are talking about wine writing, the tradition of writing about food and wine is a great one and goes back a long way, and is some of the most magnificent writing in the world is about food, about, well, let's talk about some of the people she quotes, Liebling, M.F.K. Fisher. Mm-hmm. You know, we can go way back. We can go back to Seneca talking about wine. Maybe he's not that lively. But
Seneca's pretty good.
Is she a good writer?
She got me very early in the book. In her intro, she says, language and wine are two of the most pleasing things we consume. They animate us and they become part of us. And she had me right there. And there were parts where I underlined that. Oh, I love the way she's phrased this. Other times I thought she just reached too far here. And this is literally purple prose.
Hey, nice, nice,
whiny words.
Yeah. Mr. Shalika, you are a writing teacher.
Yes,
why I'm asking.
You know, I was really seduced by the language, especially in the beginning. She gets a little more descriptive, kind of in a drier way as she gets in through the book. But things, I started making asterisks, saying that she's like a Bartlett's factory. Things like this, the landscape.
That's
was
a good thing, right? The Bartlett is. It is a good thing, right?
Oh, how could there be any doubt?
Yes,
she says the landscape was a Matisse drained of its color. That's good. I can see that landscape, right? I need a drink. Even this drier line, I need a drink to get through the arsenic hours, 5 to 7 p.m. I thought, well, yes, there are all these things that are very, very good, especially at the beginning. Later on, it dries up a little bit, this sort of this richness of the language. I think, though, that when you're writing about food and when you're writing about wine, and she says she, as a dancer, she's always connected to the body. So we're talking about the pleasures of the body. Would she say, comfort me with Cabernet?
Yes.
You know, so if we're talking about the body, you have a permit for a higher voltage, right, of the purple prose, I would say.
I dissolve with pleasure into the wine like a sugar cube with warm water poured over it.
Oh, wait, come on! Come on! No, I will not permit this! I'm sorry! I mean, you know, I love Stephen. Are you there? Buddy.
That's pretty bad.
Buddy.
But I found, for the most part, there were a few moments like that where the odd sort of phrasing kind of slapped me in the face, and I thought, oh, whoa, that went a little too far. But, I mean, for the most part, I found it sort of in the middle. It did its job in delivering what she wanted to say to me in a way that didn't, and you know, to be honest, the writing itself neither thrilled nor offended me. I thought it was just effective.
And also, to jump in her defense, I think my favorite food writing is, in a way, food and drink writing is A.J. Liebling's Between Meals. And the writing in A.J., well, in that book, the writing doesn't jump out at you. You don't say, ah, yes. But it's the whole character. It's what he's up to. It's that when he has to make that difficult decision, whether having a steak and poor wine or beef heart and a new Tavel. And you think, oh, yes, you know, I sense the drama. I get that same sense from her.
Except that, you know, when he goes to dinner, he begins to talk to the chef and discovers that the chef's wife has left him and she's been a hideous person and she's left and he's in a really bad way, and the depiction of the character of the chef is complex. Layered, one even might say, it begins with a burst of fruit and finishes on a dry and lasting note. Whereas, I mean, and this is my only criticism. I mean, I begin with the dedication for my mother Anne, the ground in whose soil I have my roots, my husband Andrew, the trellis to whom I cling, and my son Ryan, the eternal sunshine in my life. You know, and it continues on in that uplifting, positive, never-changing mood the entire way.
If we quoted what you wrote on cards to your wife, in effect, it's the same kind of thing.
I don't publish the cards to my wife.
Well, perhaps just as well. But look, what she gathers, what she does do, is that question of character. So when she describes one of the Burgundy owners, she calls him, he looks like Sean Connery's brother off the cover of Gentleman Gardener's Quarterly. Bang, I saw him,
yes, I did. And let's give her due and remember that she's a highly acclaimed writer. She's won many awards for her writing, her wine writing.
Well, this is my next question then. Thank you for pointing that out. And Stephen, maybe you're the person to answer this, but I would give this book to somebody. Mm-hmm. Right? I would
Absolutely.
Buy it and give it as a present to many men, and I will do so. So I'm making conversation.
A good bottle of wine.
And it is also my role as the host to be the dink. Okay.
Provocateur.
The host is always
well
the dink.
Done, sir. Well done.
Yes. Right? Well, having achieved that.
but somebody's got to do it. But one of the problems is, for instance, you know, you talk about Liebling, mm-hmm. who, you know, begins discussing his appetite by saying, you know, Proust produced 12 volumes of a whiff of a piece of dried sponge cake. Imagine, you know, if he'd had a real appetite, he might have produced a masterpiece. Well, there isn't a joke in this book that's as complicated and sophisticated as that, is there?
No, perhaps not. But, you know, it's like saying, you know, it's not Shakespeare. It's a form of looking down on a thing. I think this book needs to be celebrated for what it is. It's some of the most sparkling writing on wine that I've seen in the recent past. I can't say that I'm a grand reader of books about wine, but certainly the magazines and the newspapers.
Yeah.
And this is a whole level above. And I have to say as well, by a fluke, I was in Washington in spring where they had the book fair, and this book was being promoted and handed out, and people were flocking to it. They were tearing the books out of off the stands there.
As they should.
I mean, I think one of the characteristics of people like Liebling is they're almost using food and you know, the thing they're writing about as a metaphor life in general, and I don't really feel Natalie McLean is doing that in this book. This book is about her relationship with wine as the thing that is wine. She's not using wine as a metaphor.
It's
for
on
the
nose.
Large.
It very much on the nose. Yeah.
But she's also trying to just.
I just got that. Yeah,
She's also making an argument just for the humanity of sharing a good bottle of wine with someone. When she says we share a good bottle of wine with good friends, we also share what makes us human. And she just gets to a level that, you know, it's just about. Let's enjoy it right now. Enjoy the moment because it's gone after this.
Well, while we're on the subject, since we are talking about sharing a bottle of wine and the camaraderie of mankind, what do you think about that wine people are putting out at dinners and parties? I mean, does anybody have any opinions on this?
Well,
I mean, honestly.
Well, yes.
People could be a little more sharing.
Back
today,
to me parties, Jesus.
What? Yeah, you won't be invited back.
You know what? I'm sorry to jump in on this one. Here, I have my one pet peeve, is that people, when you're out at receptions or something where there's not going to be a lot of food, it seems to be a rule, I'm not going to bring good wine because nobody else will either. We're drinking trash. My rule of thumb is we should bring a bottle of wine, which costs just as much as in our parents' generation, a 26er of Canadian Club cost. Right, so whatever that is, that's how much. 25 odd, my friend. It drives me crazy that we're drinking trash. We appreciate good wine, reportedly. We're supposed to be so much smarter than our parents. Why are we drinking such crap when we go outside of a meal?
Well, the theory is, of course, isn't it, Stephen, that you don't take a good bottle of wine to a lot of people because they won't appreciate it? Is that the theory?
It's partly that. I mean, it really depends on the group. I think one of the big problems just in buying wine and having wine in Canada, and I'm sure it's the same in Ontario, is most people actually have no idea what they're buying. Because you know, my wife runs a Canadian winery, a lot of people will bring a bottle of Canadian wine to our house or have it out, and without realizing, you know, that these commercial wineries, it's actually Chilean wine in a Canadian bottle, and that's actually the worst possible thing you could be doing.
No terroir there.
No, and the level of not just the level of education about it, but the actual amount of work you would have to do to become educated about it is astounding, and I think it leads people to think they're doing one thing when they're doing another.
Yes, it makes you want to say, no more Australian Shiraz, think Spain. Doesn't it? You know, next time you go to a party, take a bottle of Spanish wine. I mean, don't you think that's good general advice?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of, anyway, going for Spanish wines to begin with. Hardly anyone drinks Riojas, but by God, those things are undervalued, and they're great, great old wines, old-fashioned wines. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did you start drinking wine? Were you at university, at Gamza, and was it Gamza? That was the one that came with the bits of grape stem in it, wasn't it? It was from Bulgaria.
Oh,
$2 a bottle.
Grade 11 prom, Ginger Cat.
Oh, God.
I don't know what Ginger Cat was, but I got very drunk on a wine called Ginger Cat.
Well, wait a second. There might be a story.
I think that was a step up from Baby Duck, actually.
Yeah.
And Tana?
You know, we were trying to improve ourselves, but we didn't know how to. So certainly in my Eastern European Canadian background, the drink at a dinner was a highball and shots on the side. So that's where you come from. We used to have Mogan David wine when I was a kid. Mogan David wine for the women, but the women generally never drank it. So the kids would drink the Mogan David wine. So we wanted to be better, but so you'd walk in, you didn't know anything, and the Blue Nun bottle looked awfully good, the classic of that era.
Matus
was another one as well. So
Matus has improved, you know.
I gather that, yes, yeah, there's Matus, a marketing campaign on for it.
Yeah.
Tasting campaign in my house.
In my case, I had the good luck to be a student in France, so there you're educated very quickly and very sharply. Being out on someone's patio in the south, and it was a very warm day, and I had a glass of white wine, and I dropped an ice cube into it, and by God, the place froze, you know? I mean, the temperature went down way more than I thought it was going to. So I learned my manners.
Steven?
When I was growing up, I grew up in Kamloops, where I don't know if they actually have wine, but my father used to make fruit wine, and when I went to university, it was in, I guess, the early 90s, and those wine kits had just sort of become readily available, so I used to make it in my closet in my dorm room.
Oh, really?
It exploded a batch and soaked every single article of clothing I had 3 minutes before an exam. But it's only sort of been recently that I viewed alcohol as anything other than a really quick way to inebriate myself. So it's been quite recent.
Kamloops is in the Okanagan Valley, isn't it?
Kamloops is next to the Okanagan Valley. Kamloops is sort of...
Okay.
It's cattle farming.
Right. Because very near to Kamloops in the Okanagan, you have some absolutely gorgeous
wine. Of the best. I think some of the best wines in North America come from. I mean, Blue Mountain does a Pinot Noir in the Okanagan Valley that I think rivals anything coming out of California or Oregon.
I have to agree with you. Wouldn't you say in general that the locus of great winemaking is moving north? I mean, there are these rumors that California is too hot now, and that most of the production, great production, is coming out of Washington and Oregon and BC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that actually true?
It's becoming more and more true each year with global warming and whatnot. Absolutely, it's just getting... Grapes tend to shut down after about 32, 33 degrees Celsius, and the traditional grape growing markets in California are getting way too much of that. People don't know you can grow grapes in the Lower Mainland. You know, I live 20 minutes outside of Vancouver on 5 acres of Pinot Noir grapes that grow just fine. And that's actually all over the world. People are discovering you
sounds
can grow
good
grapes.
To me.
We'll be right out.
That's my next trip.
Well, that's we'll part of the problem.
In
2 weeks. Feel free to come by.
Well, that's a part of the problem. When, east here, I keep it whenever I go west. I'm trying to drink things out of the Okanagan Valley, and I'm loving it all the time, but we don't see most of those
no,
wines here.
No.
It's just, it's, I'd love to just go out there and drink my way up the valley.
Well, this raises one of two last points I'd like to bring up with you. One is, what do you think the best wine city in the country is? I'm going to nominate Calgary, right? I was recently in Calgary. No, seriously, they have whatever it is, regulated, you know, their wine stores, and they have there's a wide range. You've got the Liquor Depot, and you're not getting a lot of good wine at the Liquor Depot. But on the other hand, you've got the Cellar, you know, on 7th, or, you know, some of those and they have the most astonishing selection of great wines from all over the world, and especially the west of Canada and the western United States. Or any other nominations?
In Cicero, outside of Chicago, there's some great wine stores where I've gone in with no time to buy, or rather no occasion to drink the wine, and spent an hour and a half looking at labels. There's one there, anywhere in BC to me, because they open up, they have everything we have, plus the West Coast stuff. So anywhere in there, a good liquor store is one of my pleasures.
When we were in Napa Valley last year, going through all the wineries, we'd want to buy wine, and the tip from one of the locals was, don't buy it at the winery, go to Sam's Club, and you could get the same wines at a better price. So we loaded up at Sam's Club.
I think, for the most part, any major city now, it's not about the city, it's about finding the spot in the city. Mm-hmm. There's every city's got one little great wine store or something like that, just about, you know, it's again, finding it. But yeah, I think we're pretty lucky here in BC.
Well, and just out of curiosity, before we go, what wine will you be opening this weekend for Thanksgiving?
Turkey's always a problem.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like a Pinot Noir with turkey, and this is well before the sideways days.
Mm-hmm. And for me, a Riesling, something white and slightly Germanic sort of Alsatian with the turkey. Turkey's a weird one to drink with.
I have an excellent suggestion for you, which I'll give it to you afterwards. And Stephen?
I would guess we'll be having something from our house. We have an Onuk Chardonnay that we use with turkey, and it seems to go well.
From your winery?
Yeah, yeah.
Can we get your wine here?
No.
Call
provincial liquor
BPX,
laws.
Right?
It's the provincial liquor laws. It's very difficult to ship wine across the borders.
What is the name of your winery?
It's Glenugie Winery.
Oh, it's Glenugie.
It's the world's only Scottish-themed winery.
Of course.
As far as we know. It was my wife's great-grandmother's farm in the glen by the River Ugie in Speyside, Scotland.
Wine from a glen, it's the last thing I expected.
It was, you know, it's an interesting marketing choice. We have a heck of a Robbie Burns Day celebration.
Oh, bad.
It turns out Pinot Noir goes best with haggis, according to our survey. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Here's looking at you. And listening.
Thank you very much.
Salut.
Kathy English and then Tanis Shalaker were in Toronto. Stephen Galloway was in Vancouver. Natalie McLean's book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, is published by Doubleday Canada. That's it for this week. Our email address is talkingbooks@cbc.ca. Help to join us next week for a comedy of manners in the world of real estate. See you then, I hope. I'm Ian Brown.